Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Osiris.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to 36 from the Vault. I'm Steve.
I'm Rob.
And we're back here.
We're back.
For a mini tour of mini shows brought to you by Smartwool. And in the spirit of our sponsor, we're going to be calling this tour Comfort Listens.
Where that's right.
We're going to be talking about four jam-related shows. One is an official live album that we'll be talking about this season. Some of them are dead adjacent. I guess half of them are dead adjacent. The other half are not, but it's in the jam milieu, if you will. And we each pick two, and you pick the first one. Tell us, what is going to be our first comfort listen of the tour?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these are, I think, us catching up on things that happened since we went off the air with the original 36. And this was one that happened, I think, right at the end of our run. And everybody, we were both kicking ourselves over the fact that it didn't happen in time for us to cover it. And I'm talking about Phil and Friends at the Sacred Rose Festival here in suburban Chicago, better known as the Philco set, thanks to the appearance of two members of Wilco, Mr. Jeff Tweedy and Mr. Nels Klein.
Yeah, and with joining Phil Lesh, and there was Carl Denson, you got Jeff Comenti in there, Stu Allen, who I had to Google him. He's sort of like a Grateful Dead tribute guy.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch the videos, he's the dude next to Tweety in the tie-dyed shirt, so you could tell the world's colliding. John Molo, the great drummer of Bruce Hornsby fame, Elliot Peck playing the Donna role, and of course, right. Graham Lesh.
Also, Margo Price for a couple songs randomly. I mean, a lot of people. It was a very full Price, stage.
I think she was like the artist in residence of Sacred Rose.
Oh,
so
right. I remember that now. Yeah.
She was showing up everywhere. Did we talk about Sacred Rose at all? Like, were they a sponsor of any of our episodes?
No, Skull and Roses was. Ah. I always get confused. Every time I open up the 2022 Phil and Friends concerts, I get confused because they were at both. But yeah.
A lot of roses.
A lot of roses. A lot of S words.
Yeah.
Too bad
Guns N' Roses didn't sponsor us. It would be nice to get Guns N' Roses in there.
Maybe next year.
Thank you. I wanted to go to this festival because it was at the end of August, like you said, in suburban Chicago, but it ran across both my wife's birthday and my wedding anniversary. Yeah. So it was a no-go. I could have gone to this festival, and I wanted to go because you obviously you have the Philco situation. You have the War on Drugs playing there. We got Goose. And Goose, by the way, it's a little teaser for a future Comfort Listen. But anyway, I wanted to go to this, but I couldn't. I didn't want to get divorced. It was either get divorced or go to this festival. Did you go to this festival?
Right. So I did. I tried. I did not go to the Philco night. It was on a Friday night, which is kind of tough to pull off. Sunday night, I tried to go. I wanted to see J-Rad. Still have never seen J-Rad. I feel like I'm cursed against seeing J-Rad. So my buddy got free wristband somehow. We drove out there Sunday night. We were going to see Kamasi Washington and then J-Rad. Thought, that's great. Nice little double bill. We're catching the very end of this festival. I got there just in time for them to evacuate the entire festival for lightning. They kind of pushed us all into the soccer stadium that was next to the festival site, let us all back in after an hour, and then more lightning, they canceled the entire festival. So I think I heard like 3 minutes of Dawes, if that's a thing. Is that a band? Somebody recognized my voice again for the second time. Somebody recognized me out at a jam
really
band
not
concert.
Know? Do you really not know who Dawes is?
I have no idea who Dawes is.
Or is this a bit? Oh yeah, Dawes has been around for a long time. They're like an indie band that has transitioned into being more of a jammy band.
Okay. And that's, you know, this festival, I was excited when they announced it because it really felt like, I mean, I am Mr. Indie Jam. And this was like half indie bands, half jam bands. And I'm like, great, they're putting these together. But then they had two stages and they didn't alternate. And they tend to put the indie bands on at the same time as the jam bands. So even if you had gone, you wouldn't be able to see both Phil and Friends and War on Drugs because they played at the same time. And you can even hear War on Drugs in the background if you listen to the odd of the Phil and Friends show. So,
well, I would have seen Philco. Because that was the event. I've seen the War on Drugs many times. They're always great. But if I had to choose, I would have seen Philco. I just have to say quick, what is the number of shows that get postponed or canceled in Chicago because of lightning? I feel like there's an incredibly high batting average for Chicago and lightning.
That's true. Because you saw Pearl Jam get delayed for lightning, right?
Right. And Wrigley. And Fish got canceled that same night.
Fish got evacuated that night too. I was at Fish and got evacuated. Pitchfork got canceled that night or canceled early.
So maybe that's
Dead
the only
Company,
other
we had a weather delay for Dead and Company our first time at Wrigley.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, it was a lot of people were ragging on this festival and they did have some other logistical issues. The lightning thing was no joke on Sunday night. That was like some intense lightning all over the place. There is a Grateful Dead song about how lightning can kill you. I think it was totally appropriate to get everybody out of there. It was sad for me, but at least I got a free wristband. I didn't pay anything. It just was a rare night out away from the family to see live music squandered.
Yeah. There's something funky about Lake Michigan, I think. It just... There's the gods of Lake Michigan. It's like, we're going to fuck with live music at least
they
once.
They hate jam bands.
Every summer. Yeah.
They hate hippies.
Yeah. There's some. It's like, we got to clean these dirty hippies with the purifying rain off of Lake Michigan. I was excited to see this show. And again, I didn't want to get divorced, so that's why I didn't go. But it has been interesting to see Wilco easing ever so gingerly into the jam band world. And we talked about this in a previous episode of 36 from the Vault, but there is there was a tour that Wilco did in 2013. I think that was that the Americana-rama tour?
It's the one with Dylan and My Morning Jacket.
Yeah, and I think and Bob Weir was on there for some dates, and Weir and Wilco played together, and there's this they played a bunch of songs, and like I think the most noteworthy was the California Stars into Dark Star and then back into California Stars, otherwise known as the California Dark Star, which is actually pretty cool. I really like how they did that. So I was primed to see what they would do with Phil. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be focusing specifically on US blues. That's going to be our most in-depth conversation. But what did you think about this set overall?
You know, it's funny to say that I had high expectations for this set, but I was a little bit let down, I think. We've discussed this on the podcast before, but I have a complicated relationship with Woko. This was the origin story of Rob meeting Steve, even, was talking about Woko and Dad Rock and et cetera.
I'd say you have inflammatory opinions about Woko. And I do, I'm going to be respectful about your opinions here, but this is our longest ongoing fight because... Yeah. Especially the Nels Klein issue. And maybe we don't even want to delve too deeply into this because this is a short episode. It's going to be like a 3-hour episode if we start talking about Nels Klein. But
We're trying to keep things tight here. This is a bad start.
I am always blown away, though, that you don't like the guy that bridges the gap between Sonic Youth and the Grateful Dead, maybe as well as anybody. That's how I look at Nels Klein.
Interesting. And, all right.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
It's somewhat inexplicable to me that not only are you not... It's not like you're just like, well, he's all right. Like, you actively dislike his playing.
Well, no, to be specific, I dislike his playing in Woko. I actually like some of Nels Klein's own work. I think he's a really interesting guitarist. I think what he brings to Woko, I've never thought it was a good fit. Obviously it is. He's been in the band for like 20 years now, right?
Right.
So my opinion is worth, you know, less than nothing. But I'm just saying with my own ears and my own personal taste, I've never really liked what Nels Klein brings to Woko. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. I wish he was a little more Sonic Youth and Grateful Dead in Woko, maybe. That I think he kind of is a, you know, I don't want to, like, he's playing the lead guitarist role a little too much to my liking in Woko. I don't know how to articulate it better than that.
All right. Well, we'll let that one lie there. Because, again, we don't need to pick this scab too much. But am I wrong? I mean, I haven't listened super close to this set.
Right.
But it doesn't seem like Nels Klein is super active.
Well, and Nels is okay, sort of active, moderately active, I think. And Nels, it should be said, has actually played in Phil and Friends before this show. He did like a few shows with him in 2014, I believe. So maybe off the back of that Americanorama tour. So I got Phil wasn't on it, but it, you know, Nels has been jam adjacent for a while. He does like the Last Waltz thing every year, and he plays with Medeski. Like, there's a lot of crossover there. But yeah, Tweedy hasn't played with Phil before, hasn't really done anything super jammy before. And apart from singing a few songs here, which he does quite well, he's sort of superfluous. Like I said, a lot of people on stage. And if you watch the video, which has, you know, I think they did some sort of webcast of these shows, and you can find the videos pretty easily on YouTube. If Jeff isn't singing a song, he's just kind of there. Like, he's strumming an acoustic guitar that you can't hear. Seems like he's having an okay time. Seems a little bored at times. The longest jam, it's not a jammy set at all. Longest jam is Shakedown Street, and Tweedy might as well be like, you know, sitting on the piano bench next to Gamenti, because he's not doing anything. So that's kind of a bummer, but I'm also like, what did I expect, really? Like, Woko is not a jam band. I would be interested if they were. More interested in them now if they had steered into Grateful Dead, you know, a lot earlier than they have been recently. But they're never going to be a jam band. That's just not what they're interested in, I don't think. So, you have these like two sort of poles in this set between like Phil and all the usual Phil and Friends people, like his son Graham and Stu Allen and Molo and those guys, Cementi. And then the Wilco side, which is pulling towards a more song-oriented focus, which is fine. It just, like, it doesn't really satisfy either one of those. So it left me a little cold listening to this on tape.
Yeah, you know, I get what you mean, because I don't love this set either, but I would go back to that Bob Weir, the sit-ins that they did in 2013 as a better representation of what a jammier Wilco is, because that actually is Wilco. This isn't really Wilco. It's just two guys from Wilco in Phil's band. Mm-hmm. And I think with Tweedy, the sense I get is that he's a guest. He's not the band leader. So that is going to affect how visible he is, especially since he is just playing acoustic guitar and not electric guitar. And they already have like three guitar players on stage. So that might've been an awkward thing to do. I do think that when Weir played with Wilco, and especially that California Dark Star thing, I think that was a cool collaboration that shows what Wilco can do in that environment. And it was easier maybe for that to be demonstrated when you put Weir in the Wilco context, as opposed to Tweedy and Nels Klein in the Phil and Friends context. I suspect that Tweedy felt some lack of comfortability with the jam bandier aspects of what Phil and Friends are. Because like when Weir was with Wilco, it was more of like a late 60s, early 70s psychedelic rock type thing that would be more in line with what his tastes are. Whereas here, you know, you're getting like the Grateful Dead tribute band guitarist sitting next to him in the tie-dyed shirt. You have like Carl Denson up there whipping, you know, Branford Marsalis like sax licks. And, you know, and I mean, Cementi actually, again, sing the praises of Cementi. I think he can kind of work in either context. I was like, man, I'd love to hear Cementi play organ with Wilco. Like it sounds.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Great. And the thing with Tweedy, I will say, I think he sounds great singing these songs. Like his voice is similar to me to Jerry, like old Jerry voice, late 80s, early 90s Jerry voice. So, you know, the sort of like craggy, worn out, but soulful aspect of what he does vocally. So from that standpoint, I really liked it. And, you know, shifting the conversation to US blues here, this is not a song I really love when the Grateful Dead do it. I actually really like this version, though.
Yeah, it's like it's a mediocre Grateful Dead song and maybe a great Wilco song. Like it actually works really well with Tweedy singing, and then it's stuck around with Wilco. Like they've been playing it. It seems like almost every show as they've been touring this fall. I know they played a little tiny show here in Chicago at a old country bar called Carol's, and they played it both sets of that show. Some video leaked of them playing it at other fall shows, I remember. But yeah, I mean, I totally agree. Tweedy, where he shines on this set is vocally, and not just on US Blues. Direwolf opening up, he sounds great on Direwolf. So he sings Franklin's Tower, it sounds really good. Tweedy has like the Jerry Garcia vocal range, but it's like you crank up the Midwestern twang like 50%, which of course is going to appeal to you and I, Steve. Like what if Jerry grew up in, you know, central Illinois instead of California?
I'm still mulling over your comment about it's a mediocre Dead song, but it's a great Wilco song. And if that's just like a drive-by shade at Wilco.
No. That's not how I mean it at all. It's just purely
that seemed like a little drive-by shooting there, but it was like you're just kind of grazing the leg with the bullet.
You're always so sensitive about anything I say about Wilco. That's why this was a fraught thing to kick off our mini season. Yeah,
I don't think that's a sensitive thing, though. Like, it's bad. It's a bad song when the Dead do it, but like if Wilco does it, it's comparably better to like what they do. Is that what does that mean?
I think it's not a bad song. I think it's an okay song for the Grateful Dead.
It's a solid song.
Yeah. But it just fits Wilco's strengths. I mean, we talked about this for 36, 40 episodes of the podcast. that the Grateful Dead are so many different kinds of bands. And there is a form of the Grateful Dead that is like really adjacent to what Wilco does. And here I'm thinking almost not, I'm almost thinking of like early Wilco, like alt country Wilco, the days of alt country and No Depression and that whole scene, which Wilco has kind of come back to a little bit since they made a country album, country-ish album this year. So like that US Blues doesn't fit this timeline exactly, but you know, the Working Man's Dead, American Beauty Dead is probably what Wilco and Tweedy are going to sound the best playing, because they're also in that Americana zone, that sort of country rock zone. US Blues is, you know, later in the Dead's chronology, but actually sounds kind of good, like, you know, reverted back to this country rock sound that Tweedy does so well. I guess is the only thing I would say. So Nels Klein, I think he had technical difficulties on this version of the song, because the solo, guitar solo in the middle, if you watch the video, is that Stu Allen guy. Not right. Nels. Nels plays Lap Steel on Direwolf and on Pride of Cucamonga, I think, later in the show. Sounds great. And he's been playing a lot of that on the new Wilco stuff and the shows they've been playing around Cruel Country. Put a little Nels pedal steel on US Blues, too. I think even better. Like it is just like it's something that fits, I think, squarely within the strengths of what at least Jeff and Nels do. And it sounds like, you know, from the Wilco versions I've heard, what the full band Wilco can do.
Yeah, there is like a weird thing that happens in US Blues, because it looks like there's a space opened for Nels Klein and he just kind of does a weird little plunk thing.
Yeah, and then he walks off stage.
And then they go into like the end of the song. And yeah, there must have been some sort of technical difficulties there. But yeah, I'm with you on the pedal steel. That's like one of the best parts of Cruel Country, the most recent Wilco record, just Nels Klein playing a lot of pedal steel. In a Jerry Garcia-esque type style, I would say, on that record. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think people should listen to this Philco show, make up their own minds, and then also try to seek out some of those Wilco Bob Weir things from 2013. Because again, they do get a little trippier in those sets, and I think it works really well. And I think there's just something about, you know, if Phil sat in with Wilco, I think it would be more effective than the other way around.
Right.
Because I think just the demands of like what Phil and Friends is, it probably doesn't really play to the strengths of Tweedy and Klein. But if you bring one of the Grateful Dead guys into Wilco, it does seem like that's the nudge to get them into more of like a jammy improvisational zone.
Now I'm into the idea. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, and certainly, you know, Tweedy has a history of, you know, with Luce Fur, Jim O'Rourke, Glenn Cochee. I mean, it's not like he is totally, averse to jamminess. Although that's in more of, again, like a post-rock type thing. I think there's always going to be a part of him that is not going to want to go full jam band. But if it's in Wilco, it can be camouflaged maybe as a post-rock experiment that's more acceptable to him. I mean, that's just speculation, but that's my sense of where he's coming from.
Right, right. Well, now I'm into this idea of Chimenti sitting in with Wilco, because I will say, in this US Blues and throughout the set, Chimenti is just having a ball. Like, he is like, he's so happy in the videos. I just love watching Jeff Chimenti play. And Molo, too. Like Molo and Chimenti are always like, you know, they're looking at each other. They're smiling. They're having a great time. But
yeah,
you know, all in all, I felt like this set, it's just like, it's trying to do too much. If it was, you know, if Philco was the name, like, yeah, you're right. Maybe it should have been Phil and Wilco and focused, you know, purely on this like sort of overlap between those two. But it's also trying to be just sort of like general Phil and Friends. The Carl Denson piece is kind of like pushing them into a different area too. I like him on some songs. I find him kind of irritating on others. Like, he does a flute solo in Jackstraw, which I don't need. I don't need that. But he's great on Shakedown Street. So, but the Carl Denson thing is not the Wilco thing. Like, that was a weird thing to smush together into one show. And it made me actually, I'm curious with your thoughts on this, because we've talked a lot about like Phil and Friends versus Dead and Company. Like, if you had to choose one, who would you go see? And I feel like I've always said Phil and Friends. I think because I like Phil the most of the surviving band members. And I find what they do with the material to be more interesting generally. But this is the kind of show that makes me think maybe I'm leaning towards Dead & Company now instead of Phil and Friends. Because I think what I like about the Grateful Dead and about a lot of jam bands is the chemistry that forms, you know, when people play with each other a lot and can anticipate each other's moves and, you know, develop that sort of interband telepathy that allows them to go to some really interesting spaces. Whereas the Phil and Friends model is seeming more and more like all-star jams, I guess. That's what this reminds me of, is like a Ringo's all-star band type concert, or like the all-star jam at the end of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame thing, which is always a mess except when Prince plays While My Guitar Gently Weeps. It just feels like people lining up to take solos. It feels very like smashed together sometimes in terms of, you know, the pieces that they've assembled. It just doesn't really gel. It doesn't, you don't get to that sort of group improvisation that I like. It just kind of becomes a bunch of people playing Grateful Dead songs and some interesting moments happen, but it's really just kind of cover bandy, I guess. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Phil and Friends is, it's just inherently less consistent because they have a revolving cast of musicians. So it's going to depend on who's playing on that particular day, how well everyone's gelling, and whereas with Dead & Company, it's the same band, so it's a little more reliable in terms of like what they're going to be able to do. And like you said, the chemistry is already established. I mean, this set, I don't want to be too hard on it because I don't think it is mind-blowing musically, but it's still entertaining, and I'm still glad it exists. And
sure,
you know, yeah. I think the best way to approach a set like this is like as a thought experiment. Like, what would it be like if Jeff Tweedy and Nels Klein sat in for a set with Phil and Friends, and like what would that produce? And I think there's some really cool moments in this show. There's some other things that are just okay, but I'm glad it exists. And you know, I think we also have to point out that this is like one show. If they played 5 shows or 10 shows, we're probably going to get a different output. You know, there'd probably be more comfortability in terms of taking it in different directions. Since you're doing a headlining set at a festival, it's a one-time thing. You don't have the experience. And also, I'm sure that there's an inclination to please the crowd a little bit, you know. So taking in all those elements, you know, I'm sure if we were there, it would have been a lot of fun to see it. But yeah, as a purely sort of tape experience, I don't know if I'm going to dig that deeply into this. Again, I keep saying this, but I think the Bob Weir stuff with Wilco from 2013 is more interesting, and that's the stuff that I am more inclined to revisit than the Philco set.
Yeah, I agree. And it, I mean, really, it's like it's a miracle that Phil is still with us and we can go see him perform live. He does seem to be, I don't want to say diminished. He's not as much of a front man as he used to be in older days of Phil and Friends. Like, it seems like Graham Lash is the band leader now, right? Like, he's in the middle of the stage and seems to be driving how the concerts go. Phil doesn't sing as much anymore. I was kind of surprised. I think he only takes lead on like 1 or 2 songs.
Yeah, here we are. We're sad that Phil isn't singing as much as he used to. Who would have thought anyone would be sad about that? But here we are. But yeah, it's great that Phil's out there. I would love to see them try this again, and maybe the second time they'll get a little freakier. You know,
yeah,
start digging into deeper cuts and start jamming out. Nels Klein won't have technical issues. But yes, definitely an interesting moment in recent jam history. I'm glad we were able to talk about it here in our Comfort Listens season.
Brought to you by Smartwool. Thank you very much, yes. Smartwool. Just as a quick tease of what the next episode might be, though, Steve, what'd you think of your buddy Rick playing with Phil and Friends?
Rick from Goose?
Yeah.
To be honest, I didn't listen to that. So I can't tell you.
Well, hurry up and listen between this episode and the next episode.
Well, I don't know if I'll have time. We'll see what happens.
All right.
We'll be back with more 36 from the Vault in the mini form next week.
Osiris.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.